Anybody else need Percy? 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 We're all good?
Okay. Okay.
Is this recording? Oh, okay. Hopefully it can be edited. No problem. Okay. By the way, I wasn't joking about the fact that I can't hear myself, so if you hear me screaming, can someone please, like, make some kind of signal of some sort, because I literally can't hear myself. Okay. The topic that I chose is a sheet that I've given before, but it's been well received, and it's a topic that comes up over and over and over again in all of my different classes. Anytime anything comes up that has to do with a deuce, with testimony, inevitably there's a student who asks, well, what about DNA? It's popular, it's on television all the time. Personally, since I love Law and Order and CSI, which is, there's nothing that excites me more when they stick that thing in the machine and close the lid and match, or something like that. So I know it's a topic that people are interested in, but yet it's one that the halakhic acceptability of DNA in the various areas of halakha where it's relevant is not so simple. And it really does make for a fascinating study, and thus the topic. The first time I gave the shiur, actually, was right when Hezbollah had been negotiating and then ultimately returned what turned out to be soldiers that were no longer alive, and there was all sorts of IDing going on, etc. So at that time it was practically relevant. For now, we'll Bezrat Hashem leave the topic for the laboratory, but nonetheless, those of you studying medicine, criminology, forensics, or anything else, hopefully we'll be able to use it. Okay. Let me start with a question for the floor. In what areas of halakha can you think of where DNA evidence would be relevant?
Paternity.
Paternity. What do you mean by paternity? This is Eitan Kastner, by the way. Yes.
The actor who someone's father is.
And why would I care?
Well, one got to think climbing like the Torah.
Okay, so there would be lineage. Let's not call it paternity yet then, let's call it lineage. Lineage would be a relevant thing. I need to know if, for example, I'm a Kohen. I've never been DNA tested. There is a gene, supposedly that Kohen gene that you can test for. Or even Jewish identity, for that matter, one could claim that one would want to test for that. It was any kind of lineage, who's related to who, etc. But paternity, and that's why I asked you what you meant, really has halakhic significance in a more important area.
From there?
Okay, I wasn't meaning that. Paternity, that's a different area. Okay, so there's paternity on the one hand. We still have to fill in the most important detail of it. Mamzerus is another. If I want to prove or disprove whether a child is illegitimate, is a mamzer, and is not allowed to marry anybody else other than another mamzer, etc., one way to tell would be DNA, and if I could then tell who the mother is, who the father is, and if it turns out that the mother or the father is not who we think the mother or the father is, then they're nailed, and the kid would be a mamzer. So mamzerus is certainly an area. Anyone else? Remembering that we still have to fill in paternity. Silence, or I can't hear. What is the two?
Well, in the same vein, if somebody's adopted and then you might have a problem with marriage.
Okay, so I guess we need to know who they are, because then it could lead to mamzerus. Okay. But there are other areas, and we still miss the main one on paternity, that we don't think of, thank God, but we should. Okay? So I'll fill in the paternity one. There's a child. Why would the child want to know who his father is, besides the emotional, etc. Inheritance is another area of halakha. Okay, we're going to call that the third one. We have paternity, still needs to be filled in. We have mamzerus. Yerusha, someone makes a claim for an inheritance. The way they can prove whether they're entitled to this inheritance would be through a DNA test, which is, I guess, kind of like paternity. Good. But we're still missing, when I say paternity, I mean something else. Well, I wouldn't, for adoption, I don't really care who the, other than the emotional, whatever. Paternity is relevant. Someone needs to know who their father is. I'll ask it differently. The child's mother, why would she want to be able to prove or disprove, or in this case, prove who the father is? Child support, yeah. In other words, if the kid or his mother want to make a financial claim for support,
That's why you take somebody to court and try to prove paternity. The lineage and the calling and all this stuff may be relevant as well, and it's cute, but let's be honest, it all revolves around money. So if somebody wants to make a claim for child support, in particular the boy's mother, DNA testing is a way to actually have that happen. Good. There are still other areas.
I'm cheating.
There are still two, three, four other areas on my list. Okay? Good. CSI, yeah. Evidence, conviction. Someone committed a crime, you want to use DNA testimony to prove that he is the criminal, etc., or to charge whoever it is. So just like in a regular court case, right off television, boom, conviction, we would love to use DNA evidence. What else? This is a room of 99% women. What is the most burning, pressing issue in the Jewish community affecting women? Aguna. Correct. If I want to free an aguna, not an aguna like we have now where it's the bum guy who won't give his wife the get, but never. You've got an aguna because the husband has disappeared, he's feared dead, you don't have a body, or you have a body that you can't identify and you want to free aguna. Think of 9/11. How do all those women remarry? So finding whatever you were able to find and using DNA or other forensic evidence to be able to master an aguna, that's already a mitzvah, a serious mitzvah. So you have that as well. Yerusha we mentioned, Mamzeris we mentioned, paternity we mentioned. There's two other areas that connect, Avelos. We're already talking about identifying bodies. Do you sit Shiva for someone? And in Israel, this is something we all unfortunately think of before everything else. We're IDing Shabbat bodies all the time. So, IDing bodies for Avelos, and, as I mentioned, with Hezbollah, when you have body parts that you now have, you don't have a whole body, you only have specific body parts, and you want to bury the body parts with the body, and if you'd be allowed to do this at all, but to open up the grave to bury the person as whole as possible, so you would want to ID the parts in order to whatever. And again, I know it sounds a little gruesome, but A, if we're dealing with DNA, you can expect a little bit of gruesome, and B, it's unfortunately part of the reality when you are running your own country with an army, in particular, that you're going to have these shilas. So the question is now that we understand all of the areas that we have to try to cover, does halakha recognize DNA or other forensic evidence as legitimate testimony? What's your gut reaction to that question? Does halakha recognize DNA testimony?
No.
Ah, so Anna's gut reaction is no. Why is that your gut reaction?
They didn't have such advanced tests.
Okay, so at times our natural orthodox leaning is, well, if it's new, then it wasn't part of the halakhic system. But if you think about that for an extra 2 seconds, that's not really true, because 90% of what we have, they didn't have then. But the way halakha works, and it wasn't entirely true, right, but the way halakha works is you take the constructs and you apply them. So if it was just that, I don't know if that would be enough. But you're correct. I think that everybody's natural reaction is, for better or for worse, halakha won't be able to recognize DNA. But why not? Why is that the natural reaction?
For a crime scene, you want me to
eat DNA. We take from our knowledge base and we say we know that the Torah system, not that the Torah system is the only, it can never modify to modern times, we know that it can, but the Torah system only accepts witnesses. And DNA may be very valid information, but it's not a witness. How do we know that we need witnesses? Let's make sure we're all on the same page. This is source number 1, 2, and 3. So let's just quickly look at it. So King in the Torah, they tell us you need witnesses. Kol makei nefesh l'fi edim yitzachat harosayach. So here it's clearly talking about convictions. The Eidachad lo yadav nefesh lamut. One witness is never enough. You need two. The lo tiku kofel nefesh l'tayach ashur rashal lamut. The guy can't pay himself, pay off the court either. You can't pay a penalty. If you deserve death, you most do not. You get the death penalty. But it has to be two witnesses. One witness is no good. Kal v'chomer, DNA won't be good. You need two witnesses. Source 2. Again, al pishnayim edim o shloshayim yumat hamet. We convict somebody. Again, this is only talking about conviction, but we convict somebody with two or more witnesses. Lo yumat al pi edachad. We never accept one witness. This applies, however, not just to convictions, but to other areas of halakha as well. Take a look at number three. Lo yakum ed echad v'ish l'kol avon v'l'kol katat v'kochet asher yechatat. We do not allow one witness. We need two. We do not allow one witness l'kol avon for any sin-related thing. Rashi points out that sin-related things include onesh mamon, so it's mamonos as well. Anything that involves financial restitution, l'kol avon, or l'kol katat, l'kol chet, asher yechatat. For any of these things, convictions, finances, etc., al pishnei edim, or al pishlosha edim, yakum, last word of that pasuk is very important, you can underline it, davar. You always need two witnesses, not one, for convictions. Money, explains Rashi that l'kol avon or l'kol katat includes money. You always need two. If you look in source four, totally different pasuk. Ki yikak ish isha u'ba'alav hayayim lo tinsachen be'enav. It's talking about divorce. You have a husband and a wife. The husband doesn't like the wife. Something's wrong. Why doesn't he like her? Ki mataba erbat davar. Underline it. Davar. Chazal learned, it's the Gemara in number five, the word davar, by gittin, is connected to the word davar by testimony. Gemara number five, ne'amar kan davar, v'ne'amar lahalan davar, apishnei edim, o apishlosha edim yakum davar. Ma lahalan, just like in number three where it used the word davar, apishnei edim, just like you need two witnesses and not one for monetary or for convictions, so too, apan, by gittin, in other words, arayot, davar sheba erva, anything like that, also apkan bishnei edim. So in all areas of halakha, incorrect, in most areas of halakha, convictions, davar sheba erva, mavanos, you always need two witnesses, 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 and therefore, DNA, thank you very much, it's cute, it's nice. It's nice to talk about after the fact, but if you don't have witnesses, that's not the Torah's system. And therefore, Anna kicks in. If it's not the Torah's system, this is new, but it doesn't fit into the existing parameters.
Why doesn't an expert who understands the science of it, why wouldn't that count as a witness?
Well, what is he testifying to? I'm going to get back to your question in a second, because you're right, but at this stage, there's nothing really to be able to talk about. In other words, I need a witness. What does a witness mean? Someone who witnessed an act. Someone who witnessed the person die. Someone who, what's he testifying to? That the DNA evidence is he has to testify to the thing that he saw. So your point is well taken. I'll get back to it.
So if there's no DNA testing, then...
I always need witnesses in order to do anything in halacha, so far.
Essentially, we're relying on Hashem that whatever punishment the person deserves, they'll get it, because without DNA, whether or not...
Yeah, the odds of being able to convict or otherwise is slim, right.
So
that's the system. For whatever reason God said, he wants witnesses. Now, Anna will claim, maybe, had God known that knew, which of course he did, but had he known that there was going to be DNA evidence, what was he going to write in the Torah? You know what I'm saying? But we're going to come back to all this. Okay? But for now, the starting point is, of course we can't use DNA as much as we would like to. The Torah didn't build it into its system. Okay? There was a question over here. Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of verse 4, that's where you have two instances, even though they may come testify that. The moon is an object. It's not something that is an essence. So if the DNA thinks the DNA, it's just an object that's two witnesses are explaining.
Yeah, but the thing, again, this is answered by the point being is that in theory, we're going to modify this in a minute, in theory, the witnesses have to come and testify to the event. The thing that they saw. I understand that. For Kiddushah Kodesh, the testimony is that they saw the moon, which is an event, if you think about it, but meaning they have to testify to what they saw.
They saw the DNA.
Okay, so we'll come back. I'm going to come back to this point. Okay? The starting point is that it won't work. It, obviously, the point is going to be at the end that it does work, but let's see how it works. Yes.
Even witnesses
could lie. Good point. I'll get to that in a minute. Yes.
Like
the person comes back from the dead and said, hi, it's me.
But now he's dead, but like, it is saying, hi.
I can't bring anybody back tonight. But No, again, that wouldn't be a test. That wouldn't be an aid. In other words, if we hold tight, and we're not going to hold tight, we're going to modify this, but if we were to hold tight that you need witness, then we'd be stuck. And it seems that that's the Torah system. Correct. I'll get back to it. Okay? No, 100%. The room wouldn't help you, by the way, but I'll, because you still couldn't prove pregnancy. One of the things is you can prove maternity, but you can't prove paternity. And I'll get back to that in a minute. Yeah.
Also, DNA is not always so accurate. Like,
you
can get damaged.
We'll get there. You've watched too much television. We'll get there. Okay. I know that's the pot calling the kettle black, but we'll both. Right. Well, I'll get back to it in a minute. Okay? These are all good comments. We'll get back to it in a minute.
I was just going to parallel this so we didn't tell me anything I was, like, actually don't say that or whatever, and compare this to medical data or, like, an expert in the subject. Like, if it was, like, a doctor or a medical researcher, wouldn't, like, then they have some weight.
Not if they didn't witness the event, okay? Then they can't testify, okay? No, I'm not speaking about Hatra'ah. That's an act of Beis Din. I'm talking here about witnesses in a testimony.
In a situation, doesn't a witness have to say something? Like, doesn't a witness have to be...
No, not necessarily. A person, for a capital case, there needs to be Hatra'ah and things like that. I don't know if it has to be the same... I mean, there it does, actually, but... But that's only in those kind of convictions. In other words, if I want to prove paternity, I don't. There's no Hatra'ah. Okay. Or, oh, you better watch out. You're going to be the father. Like, you don't need to do that. Right, exactly. Okay, we think of all these capital cases, but there's convictions that have nothing to do with capital cases. Any kind of conviction. Okay. Now, clearly this is not true, that it has to be witnesses, and it's not true for a lot of the reasons that you've said, but I'll try to flesh them out a little bit more. Number one, we said you always need two witnesses. And I showed it to you in the psukim. What were the areas of halacha where you need two witnesses? Convictions, l'kol avonu l'kol chet. Money, that Rashi over there, at the end of number three, l'kol avonu l'kol chet includes money. Dabar, gilei arayos. There's one very important area of halakha that we didn't cover. We did money, we did arayos, we did convictions. Body identification would depend on the ramification of what the idea of the body is going for. So if it's money, whatever. But what area of halakha did we miss? How about everything? All we did was money, convictions, and gilei arayos. What about this whole area of halakha that we call isurim, ceremonial law, which is Orthodox Jews, that we think is 99% of halakha, right? It's all ceremonial law. What's kashrut?
What's
happening? Kashrut, avelus, the ceremonial law. It's not money, it's not a conviction, it's not gilei arayos. Okay? As an example, okay? So, kashrus has nothing to do with DNA, unless you want a DNA test your piece of meat, but let's just use kashrus as an example. How many witnesses do I need to attest that something is kosher? One. This is called a etad ne'emad v'isurim. Now you can even know where that halakha comes from. That halakha comes from this pasuk. So this is the thing that's missing. You don't need two witnesses for isurim. So, for example, when we say women are pasul edus, it's not true. Women, as usual, get a bad rap from that. It's not true. Women are only pasul edus in a situation for whatever reason when you need two. But women are perfectly good witnesses anytime you need aid at that. So, why is DNA any worse than aid at that? This pasuk only knocked out the times when you need shnei edim. So it's quite possible that anything that would be isurim, in fact, DNA or any other testimony for that matter, because you don't need witnesses. Proof, Eidachat also works, and that's clearly not testimony either. So, but it wouldn't help in our list of cases, because if you go back to our list of cases, as Aaron correctly pointed out, well, they're all, but Avelis it would. Okay? So Avelis would be the one exception to the rule, but that's a minor exception in this long list. You wouldn't be able to master an Aguna that way. You wouldn't be able to prove paternity because that's money, you wouldn't be able to prove Yerusha because that's money, etc. So that's question number one. Question number two, somebody asked. I'm doing this little letter. Take a look, please, in number 6 and in number 7. Okay? And I'm not going to forget Hebrew letter. I just want to stop at the right point. And also keep an eye on the clock. Ha'isha shalach ba'alah le'medinat hayam u'bal v'yamru la'med ba'alech. Woman and her husband go on vacation. Witnesses come. And they say to her, not witnesses, somebody comes and says your husband died. V'nisait. And now she remarries. V'yakakak ba'alah. And afterwards, the husband comes back and says, I got lost on the way back from the casino, shalom. But in the meantime, she's remarried. She has to get divorced from both. It's really a misnomer. She doesn't need a divorce from the second because she was never really married. But she's usher to the second. She's usher to her original husband because she, in essence, cheated on him as well. The Gemara, number 7. Amar Rav Zeira. Mitoch omer shehechmira aleha bisofa. Because the potential downsides to her are so severe that she loses both husbands, in essence, due to no fault of her own. Therefore, we're going to be lenient on her at the beginning. What does that mean? I'll tell you in a second. Lo lechmir v'lo lechol. Ask the Gemara. Well, then why should we be mekel? Why should we be machmir? Be neither. Why are we going out of our way to artificially create this balance? Oh, we're going to be mean to her then, so we're going to be lenient on her here. Mishum iguna ikilu be'rabanim. The rabbis wanted to be nice and lenient to help Agunot, contrary to popular belief. The rabbis wanted to try to be helpful for Agunot, so they changed what should have been the halakha. This is called Takanat HaAgunot. In Torah Mitzvah, we did this example as well. And they allowed a woman to remarry and not be an Aguna based on the testimony of one witness. Why? Because the potential to be so strict is so strict in the other direction. The rabbis, for whatever authority they had to do that, but made a cleaning in the other direction. Point being, even for Aguna, we say, I don't need two witnesses. It's a Sakana Jerabbanan, how that works, not for now. Again, that was the Torah Mitzvah thing we did, if any of you remember. But, you don't even need two witnesses for Aguna. That's a Davar Sheva'erva. So suddenly, ooh, we need witnesses, and we need two of them, isn't necessarily true. Number 3, as was pointed out, 3/4 of halakha we don't use witnesses for. We invoke halakhic principles. Rove, we decide things based on majority. Chazaka, kashrus, for example, doesn't only work on one witness. Chazaka, once something is established as kosher, I don't need to continue proving that it is. So I have rove, I have chazaka. The Gemara is full of things without testimony. And fourthly, as someone correctly pointed out, this is Robin, witnesses lie. Well, they may be wrong. Not forget lying. They may be wrong. They think they know something. And number 5, as Ann pointed out before, what does a witness actually come and say? Let's pretend. Here's my dead body. Here it is. And I've got a dead body. The witness comes and says, oh my God, that's Joe. Well, how do I know that's Joe? I'm a witness. How do I know that that's in fact Joe? Because I know what Joe looked like. Or, I see what Joe is wearing, and he's wearing a name tag, and it says, Joe. Or I find his wallet, and I pull out his wallet, and I go, oh my, it is Joe. In other words, even the witness is basing his testimony on some amount of evidence. So, you want to tell me it procedurally has to be done through witnesses, okay. But to tell me that substantively forensics is irrelevant because it all has to be witnesses does not make a lot of sense. Logic would dictate that there is room in the halakhic process, despite what the psukim say, that there is room, depending on how much, for some amount, depending on how, that's what we're going to talk about now, of evidence, what we'll call DNA, forensic evidence, etc. Okay? We're good? Okay, so now we have to talk about sources that indicate to what level do we accept evidence, and how accurate must that evidence be, because if somebody points it out here, DNA is not perfect, Sam, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Excuse me one second, Ovidio man, no problem. Okay. Evidence in halakha is called simanim. That's the term. Okay? Is that term familiar to anyone from anywhere? Simanim. Also, I was thinking a little bit more halakhic, but true. Okay, that's also there, correct. But it's not where it's famous from. Simanim. What? I can't hear, remember? That's all cute. Halakha, halakha, halakha. Something's lost. There we go. If I have a lost object, and I want to know if I have to return it or not, the halakha says, of Hashavas Aveda, if the thing doesn't have simanim, and therefore the person who lost it is going to give up hope of ever finding it because there's no way to ID it, it's mine. However, if the object has a name tag on it or any other identifiable mark, what we call a siman, then there isn't going to be yayush, the person's not going to give up hope, chayav lahakriv, and I have to hang signs. And if you've ever seen signs, I don't know if they're common here in America, in Israel you see them at every bus stop, sha'on nimsa, efshar lekablo al pi simanim, at this phone number. You identify the mark, boom, you get your object back. Siman. Okay? There's a machloket in the Gemara in number 9, okay, whether or not simanim are de'oraita or de'rabanan. Meaning, if simanim are de'oraita, they're very powerful. A siman has Torah value, it's based on this, that you have to act. Then, logic dictates, if simanim are de'oraita, that we would apply the same rules to other areas of halacha. If, however, simanim are only de'rabanan, what does that mean? That min haTorah, I don't have to return an object with simanim either, because they're only drabanan. Only from the Torah, no simanim. Came the rabbis and they said, we should be nice to each other. If you see that an object has a siman, you should return it. But midaraita, simanim would have no halakhic stature. And then we wouldn't apply it to other areas of halakha because it's only a takana of the rabbis in Hashavas Aveda. I'll show you this now inside. Take a look at number 8. The psukim of Hashavas Aveda, lo tereh shor achicha, et shor nidafim et alam tamehem, hashek tishidei lachicha, return lost objects. If you don't know whose it is, or you can't find the guy, take the object home, become a shomer on it, then you can hold it until the person claims it, and then you return it to him. This is true not only for his coat, but this is also true for his clothes, and for his chamor, and for his this, and for his that. Lo to kalitalein, you can't ignore a lost object. All of this shopping list of objects you need to return. The problem with psukim, of course, is the shopping list. Why do I need the Torah to identify simlato, chamoro? I know that already. It's an object. You already told me return is lost object. Why single out different types of objects? Anyone who's a Kerem at Sinai, again, learned this. This is an example of a klal, uprat, uklal. And then I have a list of prats in the middle. Why do I need each one of them? So the Gemara, the Mishnah, says, Mishnah number 9, Apat Simla Haitab Beklal. Simla was already known by the general rule, return lost object. Call Eila, Velama Yatata. So why do I need this whole list? Why was it singled out? Lahakish Eileha. To teach me something. Lomar lecha, ma simla miyuchedet sheyesh ba simanim. Clothes are unique in that, I guess they didn't know the standard seminary fare of the black skirt. But everyone's clothes are unique, assumes the Mishnah. And therefore, it has simanim, the yesh la tovim, and people come and want to claim it. Ap kol davar sheyesh bo simanim, the yesh la tovim. So begin chayav lahakriv. From the word simla, we learn the halacha of simanim. Sounds very d'oraita, right? That the Gemara dot goes on. Ibay elohu simanim d'oraita or d'rabanan. Are simanim d'oraita or are they d'rabanan? My nafkanita, who cares? La hudre get the isha b'simanim. Would a get go back to its rightful owner, the woman, i.e., to allow her to be divorced, just based on simanim? If simanim are d'oraita, and then we apply beyond Hashavas Aveda to Hilchos Gittin, which is the Darshan Be'erva, Mahadrina, and then she gets to get that. However, the Iyamr is d'rabanan. If simanim are only d'rabanan, meaning it's limited to Hashavas Aveda, ki avid rabanan takanta b'simuna, aval b'isura, lo avid rabanan takanta. And the Gemara does not resolve this machloket. We don't know whether simanim are applicable in kolat ha'rakula, because they're da'araita, like the pasuk seems to indicate, like the Mishnah. On the other hand, we don't know if simanim are only drabanan, and then they wouldn't apply anywhere else. we have a Mishnah that clearly says the Daraita, the Gemara twists the Mishnah and reinterprets it. Crap. So we're stuck. We have no source to give us the Manim Daraita, and therefore, in theory, we have to assume the Gemara. We're not going to allow Aguna, we're not going to allow Ramzerim, we're not going to allow this, we're not going to allow that, we're not going to pass the Halakha based on Simanim, on the chance that it's only limited to Hashem HaSavim. Okay?
Can you just say that testimony is always based on Simanim?
We still have all of our questions, right? We haven't answered a single one of them.
Okay.
Okay? You're on page, then. Everything's good. Okay? We're back to where we started from. Simanim, we don't know if they're acceptable in halacha, i.e., we don't know if evidence other than testimony is available in halacha, yet we have all those questions we asked which said, it must be. Okay? Worse than that. Worse than that. I'm going to shorten this a little bit through the lack of time. There are conflicting sources everywhere. Everywhere. Some sources say simanim work, like the Mishnah that we read. Other sources come and say simanim don't work. Or might that work? Like the Gemara that we read. And I could give you a shopping list, and if we had more time, there's all sorts of Rambams here, where you get stuck in conflicting sources. The bottom line, though, is really very simple. If you take a look at number 13, in the Magid Mishnah, the Magid Mishnah outlines the entire bottom line for us in very organized fashion. Do you know why sometimes the sources say simanim work, and sometimes the Gemara says that simanim don't work, and sometimes the Gemara records that it's a machloket? It's really very simple, and it's really very logical. Why would there be sometimes yes and sometimes no and sometimes maybe? Depends on the case and the reliability of the particular siman that we're talking about in that limited case. So there's no conflict. It's really very, very simple. When the Gemara said simanim work, those are really good simanim. And those are, of course, daraita. And when the Gemara at times says simanim don't work and we need only evident mamish testimony, well, duh, that's because if I only have a siman, that is bad. And when the Gemara that we just read records, well, maybe, I'm not sure, it depends, well, that's because the siman's kind of, they know me. It's kind of in the middle. So we can read this inside in number 13. Ba ba la vidah, and at times simanim is quoting the Rambam in number 13. Ba la vidah. This is now the Magid Mishnah. Let's call it that even. Simanim muvhakim biyoter. Really good simanim. Kidon. Nekev yeshbo b'tzad ot ploni. If I have a siman that says on a particular letter in the woman's get, in that exact spot on the right side of the letter aleph, in the third aleph that appears on the get, I know that there was a hole in the parchment. That's a pretty darn good siman. Okay? That, the peyote ba'elu, the elu simanim masirim alayim aveda dvar Torah l'divrei akol. Everybody would agree that that's an object that has to be returned to Oraita. The harei hein ke'edim. Those simanim are equivalent to testimonies. You can't argue with them. Simanim chashuvim, on the other hand, good simanim, chashuv simanim, kigon, midat orkau umidat rachbo v'chein mishkalo. If I have an object and I only am able to identify it by its measurements, length, its width, its weight, well, there could be a lot of things that exactly have those exact dimensions. Pretty good siman. Odds are it's accurate, but not like the letter on the right, etc. So those, says the Magid Mishnah, machzirin alehem aveda, those you still have to return them. The elu machloket the Gemara, those are the ones that the Gemara records the machloket him, he's alright to homage Rabbanon. The elu nikra'im lefamim simanim muhakim the Gemara. And sometimes we call those simanim muhakim. But we don't really call them, we never call them simanim muhakim bioter. Another name for them would be simanim benoniim, simanim emsa'iim. Do we like the name for those simanim muhakim? Okay, it's not simanim muhakim bioter. But do we like the name simanim muhakim for these middle of the road kind of simanim? It's a little confusing, isn't it? It's like, why don't we just call them good ones, medium ones, and bad ones? See what the problem's going to be? If the term in the Gemara is simanim muhakim, it's a recipe for confusion. Okay. And then he goes on. Fine. Then yesh simanim grui. Then there's those bad simanim. Kigon sumki v'chiyuri. Oh, it's black. Oh, it's white. With no measurements or anything, just its color. Those are bad simanim. The ein maksuri malayim aveda. And for that, you wouldn't even have to return a lost object. Somebody says, I lost something black. Oh, it's black. Well, anything could be black. So I have three types of simanim. Simanim gruim, simanim muzakim biyoter, and the middle, which are called simanim muzakim, which is confusing, and is also called simanim binoniim and simanim emtsai. Now take a look at the following. The Rambam in number 12. We're going to compare it to the halacha and Shulchan Aruch of number 14. Mitzao harug omet. I find a dead body. If the face is recognizable, the hero, and I can recognize him, I can recognize from the face. This isn't even called simanim, this is called tziyat ayin. I recognize the person, oh, it's Joe. Me'idin alav. Then based on that, I testify that I saw Joe. Okay? I have evidence. The evidence isn't a siman, it's tziyat ayin. I recognize the person. Based on that, I can testify. The imni talachad me'edu, that if part of the face is no longer intact, afal pi sheyesh lehem simanim, even though the body has on it simanim bigufo, I recognize, I remember Joe had had this particular birthmark on his leg, and I see now a body, and I see the leg with the birthmark, that's called the siman already, that's not tziyat ayin. Tziyat ayin is the face. I recognize the siman bigufo, uvikelav, I recognize his possession. I've got his wallet, his driver's license. The afilu shuma, even if he has a work, and it's clearly that it's him, nonetheless, ein me'idin alav, shema acher hu. That's no good. That's not enough for testifying on a dead body. Compare that Rambam now to number 14, the halach and Shulchan Aruch. Mitzao harug omet. Into daktova kosamot. Notice he's quoting the Rambam. It's like word for word. Uparsuf panav kayamim. The hikiru, bahem shu ploni, me'idin alav. The im nital echad me'elu, so far he's word for word the Rambam, then he says, afal pi sheyesh lehem sumanim muvhakim biyoter, dik kelav, even if I have really good simanim, like his wallet and his driver's license, einam klum. It's not good enough, this matches the Rambam, right? Dechai shinan l'she'ela. Maybe it's somebody else. We're worried. Maybe he was borrowing the guy's wallet. He needed a fake ID to get into drink, so he borrowed his driver's license. It wasn't a picture license in those days. Whatever it is, and he got caught in the plane. Remember the movie, The President's Plane is Missing? Great movie. It was one of these, like, you know, late-night movies where Air Force One goes down, and they think the president's dead, so the vice president, who's the bumbling idiot, is about to go to nuclear war with China, but it turns out that really the president was hiding in Camp David making a secret peace deal with the Chinese, so they took a guy who looks like the president. This was the movie Dave was based on this. They took the president, someone who looks like the president, and they stuck him in Air Force One so that everybody thinks he was going off to vacation in Hawaii, when really he was off in Camp David, and a journalist figured it out, and there was peace in the world, and everything was great. Anyway, great movie. This. He borrowed his identity, okay? Then he goes on. Afilu hayalahem simanim bigufo. Even if we have simanim. Notice it doesn't say muvakim biyoter. Simanim bigufo, the afilu shuma, ein me'idin alav. Aval. Now the Shulchan Aruch goes on without the Rambam. Hayalahem bigufo, simanim muvakim biyoter, me'idin alav. That's different than the Rambam, isn't it? In other words, throw out your sources. Whoops, sorry. Because sometimes one guy will call it a siman mufak. To one guy, that's a siman mufak biyoter, but the other guy will interpret it that's really, no, it's just a siman mufak. It's a siman benoni. And they'll start arguing. And you've got semantics going on, and until you cut through the semantics, you don't know what you're looking at. And therefore, in the end of the day, the bottom line is the same. How you reconcile the sources is going to be subject to semantical debate. And therefore, in the end of the day, we pass in the same way. If I have siman mukat biyoter, and I can identify a source that says it's a siman mukat biyoter, we're going to accept it. If it's a siman garua, we're not going to accept it. If it's a siman benoni, we're not going to accept it, except for Hashavat Aveda. Or, one last catch to this topic, if I can string together multiple simanim benoniim, that's going to be good too. Maybe. Okay, maybe. So simanim muvakim biyoter all by themselves are great. Simanim gruim, no. Simanim benyoniim lechumra sefer Hashem Saveda, no. Unless I can string them together. And by the way, some people will allow me to even string together a siman garua as long as I have some simanim Benonim. Because if I had Siman Muhati Yotzer, I wouldn't need it. Okay? So now let's put it all together and go through our cases in our last 2 minutes. What I'm telling you now comes from Rav Vosner and Rav Nissim Karelis. So these are Haredi posted. There's a lot of modern discussion on this. Oh, I forgot one. Sorry, the most important thing. Where's my spreadsheet? That's what I forgot. Accuracy. Is DNA a Siman Muhakti Yotzer, a Siman Benoni, or a Siman Garua? Well, that depends how you define the accuracy to be Muhakti Yotzer. What makes something Siman Muhakti Yotzer? The only source on this, it's wacky, is this Maseis Bin Yamin, I don't know who he is. But he's the source, and the only source that I know of, who tells us in the end, you can look at it at the bottom there, Echad Mi'elef or Alpayim. Either 1 in 1,000 or 1 in 2,000. Let's put that in normal numbers. How much is 1 in 1,000? 99.9. What's 1 in 2,000? 99.95. Okay? So there's a machloket within the Maseis Bin Yamin is the only source. Do you need 99.9 accuracy, or do you need 99.95 accuracy? One second in. Everybody quotes the Maseis Bin Yamin as requiring 99.9%, not 99.95. Meaning, when the first articles came out about this stuff back in the 80s, it was about tissue typing. Okay, I have the statistics written down here. Sorry, 1989, before DNA, blood type. It was only 93% accurate. Not good enough. Tissue typing, 95.98%. Not good enough. DNA, how accurate is DNA? So I answered.com for you on the bottom. This is from a few years ago. I didn't get a chance to relook at this. If it's more accurate now, 99.9%. Pretty accurate, right? Look at the statistics. In a city of 1 million people, if someone's convicted of a crime based on 99.9% accuracy, 1,000 other people could have done it. So I'm looking for daddy. I'm looking for my father. Are you my mother? But don't worry. I can get you 99.9% accuracy that I'm your father. Of course, there are 1,000 other men in this city who could also be your father. Call me Papa. It's not going to work. But yet 99.9% accuracy would seem to be the halakhic requirement. DNA, there's two types of DNA. Multiple donor, same donor. In other words, if I want to prove paternity, how am I going to do that? I take a swab from Eitan, I take a swab from me, we compare them, and we see if it's possible that we're related. That is not 99.9% accurate. That is slightly less. Doesn't meet the criteria. However, if you want to prove that I committed a crime, and you find my hair on the mattress, and you're comparing the hair on the mattress to my hair here, and it's the same donor, that is 99.9% accurate. So that would be acceptable if we accept the Simanim Mufakim Biyoter and don't require full testimony. Okay? So here we go, the bottom line. Okay? Kvura on body parts, to open up the kever and to add it to the kever. DNA? Why not? There are no ramifications, it's not a big deal, it's Isurin, Eidachat is enough, Simanim Muzakim Biyoter is enough, no problem. Avela. Yeah, why not? Sit Shiva. The exception would be is if we don't let the woman remarry and it's a wife sitting Shiva for her husband, it's a little confusing that she sat Shiva but we're not going to let her remarry, so there are those posting who will say don't sit Shiva either. But in theory, who cares?
What about for insurance purposes?
Oh, so then it becomes a mamonos claim. Halakha doesn't recognize, I don't say what's insurance. I don't think there's a halakhic idea of life insurance. It's an interesting topic. We should research that next year. But is there life insurance in Halakha? There's malpractice insurance that we learned in insurance. I don't know. Okay. Don't know. I don't know if there's insurance. Okay. Aguna.
Would it mean to come in Yerusha?
Oh, get back to Yerusha in a second.
You're not entitled to the
leadership. Right, exactly. In theory, one could connect that. I just don't think there's a halakhic concept of insurance stuff. Aguna. So, your gut says no because it's a davar shebe erva, but didn't we learn that? Now, we're lenient even with one witness. Therefore, as they claim, yes, we would allow DNA, but it certainly has to be same donor DNA, and ideally we want to string it together with other simanim benoniim.
Exactly.
Yes. Correct. So we will accept DNA because of the kula by Aguna. We will accept even Simanim Benoniim if we can string them together. What they did with 9/11 is if you could place the person in the building with a phone call or something like that, if a person's name showed up on the American Airlines passenger manifest, there's a rule in halacha that an uman eno mare anafshe. A professional won't want to taint his reputation. American Airlines wasn't going to lie on their passenger manifest. They're professionals. If I hear a guy talking what we call mitzvah chuzitumah, mentioning to a friend, oh, I happen to see, then well, the guy doesn't know that you're interested. In other words, we will take all of these mediocre kind of testimonies, string them together. How much you need to string together, we could debate, but for agunas, we want to try to be nakal. Paternity. Remember, paternity means money. No. By money, you need 100% proof, because the rule of halacha in money is hamosi michavero halacha raya. The burden of proof, literally proof, is on the other side. You need 100% proof. We will never transfer money based on DNA or other forensic evidence. You need 100% proof. Mamzerus.
Is that the father admitting?
Yes, I guess the father admitting work. I guess. I don't know.
Okay, but what about one? Because
whoever's holding the money keeps it until you can prove it, and of course, if you can't prove it, you
can't.
You would never move money based on DNA, because it's not 100%, it's only 99.9.
Wait, what about
according
to American law?
Oh, I have no idea. American law now accepts DNA. Mamzerus, you would never allow DNA testimony, because for Mamzerus, you also need 100% proof. That's according to the Torah, and that's because we don't want to create mamzerim. But, no, 100% proof. Yerusha, this is my favorite one. Yes or no? It's money, so you would say no, right? Answer, it depends. If there's nobody else claiming the Yerusha, you're not moving money away from anybody else, then yes. But if somebody else already has the Yerusha money, or somebody else is making the claim, and he has Hamoti Mikhavel Araya kicks in, we won't allow DNA.
What about if the other is a woman?
If there's a son, then the daughter isn't entitled to the Yerusha, but if she's already claimed it, let's say, and now he comes to try to claim it, then she's holding the money. Whoever's got the money wins, and if the estate has the money, then whoever comes first wins. So that was fine. And then finally, convictions. In theory, no, because we don't like convicting people anyway, so you might think we want 100% proof. But others claim yes, because we know from the Gemara we convict people all the time based on Rov and Chazaka. We kill people based on Rov and Chazaka. So if we kill people based on Rov and Chazaka, Kal v'chomer, we're going to convict somebody based on DNA, which is even more accurate, 99.9, as well.
But
so,
when was the DNA was discussion? Like, if you did have one witness,
it wouldn't make, again, DNA is never a witness, it's a siman. So if it's something that simanim work for, then it's fine. We might string together if it's a siman benoni, and the eidachad is no worse than a siman. It may just not be any better. Okay? So therefore, the topic of DNA is complex. It has a lot of factors. It applies in certain cases and not in other cases. It depends on the accuracy. We've talked about that, and it depends on which area of halakha.
The first is determining how to do all that. Does it really matter if we're in halakha? If
someone's your father,
by American law, the DNA test
is going to
work. And
well, listen, once you're already involved in American law, you get him starting getting involved in the Zemachus Fazina and all these other complicated halachas that are not my area of expertise. But and then I can be tricky. Halacha has its own system, and halacha requires certain burden of proof that American law may not necessarily accept.
What about Israeli law?
So Israeli law, I'll read it to you straight out of my notes. Okay, I forgot about this because it's been a long time. Where is it? There was a court case, I thought I had it in my notes. I really thought I had it in my notes. I don't see it here, so I don't have it in my notes. Anyway, there are court cases all the time in Israel on this. In general, Israeli law, not always, but it's based on Mishpat Ivri. And the judges in an Israeli court case will go into the Makoros. And by the way, an excellent source of research for Torah topics is Google, but after you're done with Google, often in Google you will find Israeli court cases being quoted because that's where you'll get all your sources. Because the judges will quote Mishpat Ivri and they'll quote the Rishonim and the Akharim and then they'll apply it. That's one of the beauties of living in Israel, where these things, they don't always match, but they certainly merge. Enjoy the rest. Here, I'm blessed.
Why?